Tonight, it is my pleasure to welcome, for the first time to many rivers, Catherine Reeves. She is an author and speaker, a radio personality, and she is speaking tonight on the subject From Compassion to Forgiveness, and we are delighted she could join us tonight. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'd just like to start off with a silent period just to get grounded and centered, just not too long, just a few minutes. If you want to kind of meditate on compassion, that would be great. If not, just focus and center and get grounded. I'd like to start with what compassion isn't. I think it's often mistaken for feelings of pity or feeling sorry for someone. And those kinds of emotions actually cause the separation and come from a place of judgment that somehow we're better than whoever we see in pain and suffering. So we can feel sorry for them, but we don't really identify with them. Whereas true compassion is an opening of your heart and a recognition that we're all one, and someone else's pain is as valid as your own pain. When you see someone else suffering, you feel that suffering within yourself. Whether or not you're capable or have the capacity to do anything about it, to change anybody's circumstances, isn't really the question. The compassion comes from simply that recognition of pain in someone else and that pain within ourselves. And it's not necessarily an easy thing to get to as far as true compassion is concerned, because it involves looking inward and looking beneath our own pain, which we all have at some level. And it's a very courageous thing to do. It is painful. It brings up a lot of feelings. And we're always taught that emotional outpouring is not a good thing. It's something that you shouldn't participate in as we grow up in this society. When in fact, spending some time with yourself to allow those feelings to surface is what makes it available to you to be able to open your heart and have that compassion, and not only for others, but for yourself as well. To recognize the pain that we all carry, and to have compassion for that part of ourselves that may find it difficult to have compassion for others. We may have been taught that whatever the guy on the street did, he deserved it. He brought it on himself. He brought his troubles on to himself. So somehow, we don't need to feel compassion for that person. And sometimes that can be such a hardened lump inside of us, it takes a lot of digging to bring that out to the surface. But once we can do that, then we can open our hearts to true compassion for whatever circumstances we see in front of us. We were brought to see that person or circumstance for a reason. So to open up our hearts and to find that space that we can share that pain with another brings us closer to the human part of all of us. And it's not just humanity, it's animals as well. When you see that the cruelty that man can do to animals is just, it's not a very far step to what they do to people. So to have compassion for animals is also just translates as well to having compassion for people. And we're all one part of one big family. So what hurts one part of the family hurts the rest of the family. And it's only by cultivating that compassion that we put out that into the universe. And it does go forward to build a more peaceful, compassionate, and loving society in which we want to live. Even though we may not, like I said, we may not be able to do anything specific to change the circumstances of somebody, just having that compassion within us is enough. Being able to open our hearts to the pain and suffering is enough. Being a psychotherapist, I ran into a lot of people that were just adamant that they could not forgive someone in their past for inflicting some sort of pain on them. Whether it was childhood pain from a parent, teacher, grandparent, whatever, or if it was maybe from a husband, spouse, lover, they felt betrayed by. They just were adamant that they were not going to give up that pain. They were not going to forgive that person. So I started using compassion as a way of opening the way to forgiveness. Once you can open your heart and understand that, or feel that someone else, you don't even have to understand or know where that other person's pain came from. You don't have to know their whole history, their whole biography, who did what to who. You just have to recognize that whatever they did to hurt you was done from a place where they were hurt. in some way, and it's manifested in a way that has caused you pain. And once you can do that, once you can open your heart to that pain and recognize that in the other person, then forgiveness follows along pretty naturally. And that's another word that we confuse a lot, I think. We confuse forgiveness with somehow accepting what someone did, that we don't deserve any better, or that it's okay that you hurt me, I can take it. Or it's really common in our society to feel undeserving. So the first place that we have to go to is within ourselves and truly learn to love ourselves as we are, warts and all, because we're all perfect as we are. We're all in the perfect place at the perfect time. So if we can go inside and really love ourselves, which takes a lot of work, it's more than just looking in the mirror and saying, I love you. It takes a lot of work to really accept who we are and embrace it. But once we can do that, we can really then understand the true value of compassion, because then we can really develop compassion for ourselves and for others and recognize that the pain is not, it's not personal. It's not just, what's the word I want to say? It's not specific to us. It's everybody's pain. Everybody has that pain. And it may come from a day in a different form, from a different way, but it's still there in all of us. And once we can get under the pain and allow ourselves to bring it to the surface, let it manifest in tears or rage or whatever way it needs to, then that's the only time we're going to be able to truly be able to let go of it. Covering it over isn't the way to go. Thinking that, well, we're just taking it in stride is really smothering it. We really have to have the courage to take the time and do the work of getting below the pain in our own hearts and releasing it in whatever way that becomes necessary. And then we can identify with the pain in others and understand that, again, we don't need to know exactly what was done to that person that caused them their pain, how it came about, why are you doing this to me? We just need to know that whatever they did that caused us pain came from a place of pain in their own lives. And they haven't had the opportunity or the insight or the inspiration to delve inside of themselves. So this is the way that they deal with it. And in most cases, it comes from a fear that we all live with. Most of the, if not all, negative emotions have fear at the basis. Fear of not being accepted, fear of not being loved or not being lovable, fear of not being good enough, fear of not having enough money, fear of not having shelter. There's a million of them. And they manifest themselves in different ways. In some ways, it's anger at striking out at anybody or anything. Sometimes people, especially in my psychotherapy practice, I had a lot of people that were dealing with infidelity of a mate. And that particular fear is the fear of being rejected. Before they can be rejected, they'll take matters into their own hands and do something that's going to corrupt or break the relationship before it's done to them. And so most people don't realize, of course, what's the basis of their behavior. But once you recognize that it's that pain and that fear that causes a person to act in a way that might be hurtful to you, you can choose to talk it out with them, to be compassionate toward them. It doesn't mean that you can't have boundaries, and it doesn't mean that there's not still consequences for whatever behavior was hurtful. Just as there's still consequences for whatever behaviors we do that hurt ourselves. Even if we ask for forgiveness, we still have the consequences to live with. So it doesn't mean that you accept the bad behavior, or that it's okay to do it again, or that you have to even accept that person back into your life. It just means that you recognize that it was not a personal attack, as much as it may feel like it, that it was coming as an expression of their own pain. So forgiveness is something that really, I've seen so many people that think that by not forgiving someone, they're hurting that person. And that person most likely has no idea that they even need forgiveness, let alone that anybody's withholding it from them. It's like drinking rat poison and expecting the other person to die. It just doesn't work that way. If you keep that unforgiving spirit inside of you, you're the one that suffers. You're the one that in whom it's going to grow like a cancer. It's going to eat you away. You're the one that's not going to be happy, that's not going to find peace, that's not going to have joy. The other person's not, they're clueless in many instances if the relationship has broken apart or in a big, massive kind of a way. You know, someone involved in a war, you might forgive the soldier that wounded you and he has no idea that he's asking for forgiveness. But for you to let that go and for you to genuinely feel that forgiveness is huge, and it's going to allow you to go on with your life and be productive and feel that joy and that peace that comes from truly forgiving. So it's to your advantage to go back and to forgive. You don't have to confront anybody. You don't have to go back into your past and drum up all the issues and have a big crying fest with anybody. You can if you want. Sometimes it's a good cathartic exercise, but oftentimes people that have hurt us in the past are no longer in our lives, they're no longer involved in our lives, or they've passed on. So you can still exercise that forgiveness without the person being in your life. You can still open your hearts to that compassion and forgiveness. Are there any questions, any comments so far? Wow, that's cool. Yes?
Yes, I was watching a movie last night where one of the characters is a government official in the English government, and he is talking to one of his people, and the person is describing something to him, and he realized while listening to this man that he had something he had to do in his office. So he says to the guy, "Please forgive me," and walks away right in the middle of what this man thought was important.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about whether that when someone asks you to forgive them for what they are doing, is that a legitimate way of, you know, accepting their transgression by saying, "Okay, I forgive you because you asked me to forgive"?
I don't think it's that easy. In a case like that, where it's more a thing about being polite, like, "Forgive me for answering my cell phone right now, but it's an important call," you know.
Well, it's done very common in England. That was the point. Mm-hmm. They find that this is the way to be able to move more fluid in their lives.
Well, yeah, I do think that forgiveness and compassion comes much easier when it's asked for, because that shows on the part of the person that may have hurt you that they're aware of it, that they're aware that they made some transgression against you, and they're asking for your forgiveness. So I think it's easier then for you to feel that compassion and ultimately that forgiveness. But it doesn't mean that that transgression was okay or that it gives you permission to do it again. But I think it does make it easier when you can have that interaction with the person.
Yeah, because in situations where there's great tragedy,
mm-hmm.
where somebody caused the death, say, of someone's child, a friend of mine, while he was drunk in a car intersection and killed the woman's 9-year-old son. And in court, he kept saying that, you know, he wanted the worst sentence that he could,
mm-hmm.
the pain of what he did. He kept asking, "Forgive me, forgive me." And she just, the cold, steely eyes just wouldn't budge. You know, she wanted him to suffer. And he told me, I was his roommate for a while, he said that the fact that she didn't forgive him made him feel better that he was being punished because of his own pain or what he did. Do you see anything going on with something like that, where somebody uses non-forgiveness?
Well, I don't think that, truth be told, his better course would have been to show himself compassion and forgiveness for what he had done, rather than to use the other person as a punishment against him. That doesn't make it okay either. His better course, for both of them, they both would have had a better life if they could find the compassion and the forgiveness within them, on the part of the mother as well as on the part of the drunk driver. But it's something that you have to do for yourself. And it would have been a better course, I believe, for him to have found that compassion for himself and therefore forgiveness for himself. And I think Kenny Johnson can probably attest to that. He's fantastic, by the way. If you get a chance to come back for his talk, I would certainly recommend it. And definitely for the mother, it would mean the world to her if she could find that. And there's many examples of that, and many stories from people that have had tragedies like that. There was an Amish family whose children were killed, two or three children in a schoolhouse were killed when a man came in with a gun and just started shooting. And they were able to find that compassion and forgiveness for the person that did this, realizing what deep, deep pain he had to have been in to perpetuate such a thing. And they were able to find that and move on. It was harder for her. It took her a lot of work. She just didn't want to forgive him. But when she did, it was like the sky opened up. It was just such an immense relief to have that sense of compassion and forgiveness. Yes?
In your practice, do you find, though, that it does take, like you were just mentioning, it can take a long time for it to really sink in, because people, don't they go through different,
Absolutely.
Just like with death or whatever.
It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of willingness, and it takes a lot of courage to confront that pain in yourself.
Sometimes it seems like people try to push you when something really bad happened to you, and they just keep reminding you, well, you remember so and so, they forgave, or telling you some little story to try to make it all go away.
Right.
And why can't you just do that?
We're not comfortable in this country, in this society, with these kinds of emotions and with coping with them. We want to get them over with as soon as possible because they make us uncomfortable. It's even more comfortable to keep anger, resentment, the need for revenge, keep all those negative feelings inside is easier because it's something we're familiar with. We're used to pain. We can live with that. But getting down and doing the work of really releasing that pain is not as easy as it might seem. And it's not a one-time thing. It's a process. It's like the layers of an onion. You can forgive something for someone and feel like yourself, you can do the work, you can have a cathartic experience, feel like you've done with that now, your heart is open. And then a month later say, something happens and it's not so easy. So it's an ongoing process, and there's layers and layers of compassion and forgiveness that it might be easy to forgive a stranger doing something to you, hitting your car or something, and it might be very difficult to forgive a family member for some transgression. So it's a process, and it takes work, but it's the same work. You may have to do it over and over and over again. Yes?
I think underneath it all is a trust that life isn't a cruel trick.
Mm-hmm.
And that just that there's always a bigger picture, and there's and there's something to learn. And it's, I think it's about choosing the learning, the path that offers learning and the path that offers growth.
Mm-hmm.
And there's paths that don't.
Absolutely. When you find yourself not forgiving, there's a tightness in you. There's a part of you that's shut, that's closed down.
Shuts down. Yeah.
And that's your heart closing in on itself. And so if it's closed in, you can't grow. You can't learn, because with your heart being closed in, your mind perhaps shut, and you can't go anywhere. You can't proceed. You can't go forward. You can't grow. And life puts these incidences in our paths for a reason. And it's not only a growing experience and a chance for spiritual growth, it's also a gift. And if you look hard enough, you'll find the gift in any circumstance that might seem bleak at the time. And you'll look back on it and realize that that was really a gift given to you to be able to grow and stretch.
Mm-hmm. How do you approach this? Is it an archaeological exploration using language, or do you work through the body, or some combination? And what about Ho'oponopono, the universal mm-hmm. practice of... who knows what I do to forgive, where, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. just doing that affirmation.
Yeah, that is a great way.
The Hawaiian and now the Chinese Qigong masters are using mm-hmm. it, mm-hmm. at least one I know of.
Is everybody familiar with that?
Yeah.
The Hawaiian technique? It's a series of four short sentences. I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you, and thank you. And you just say it over and over in whatever order comes to you. It's probably the right order for you. But it can have a very calming effect, and it can have a very opening effect. So that's one way to kind of get in touch with that, to begin the work of getting to that compassionate state where you want to be able to really open your heart. It sounds like, why would I want to open my heart to any more pain? I have enough pain going on. Why do I need more? But as much as you want to be open, you want that same openness from other people, because that's what makes us united. That's what makes us one. It's what makes us this whole human family. So when you have shared pain, it's a much lighter burden than when you try to carry it all on your own shoulders. So that's,
yeah, and what's interesting about Ho'oponopono also is that you can say these powerful words, and you don't have to have something specific in mind, that it's a real general kind of
right.
prayer, and it's very short and very compact. It really sums up all of what The Course in Miracles says. You know, there's this book that's like 500 pages, and then there's the four little lines that say the exact same thing.
You can say it when you're driving in your car. You can say it just any time, over and over. And it's very powerful. It's a very powerful thing.
Would you say the four again, please?
Thank you. I love you. Please forgive me.
I'm sorry.
And I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And there are gestures that go with it in the Chinese form. My first part of the question is, what do you do?
What do I do?
Yeah.
I meditate.
When you're working with people, doing...
When I'm working with other people, I teach them how to meditate. And if they're resistant to that, because a lot of people think that all of this still is kind of weird Eastern woo-woo New Age stuff. So if they're still resistant to even the word meditation, I try to have them just to sit quietly. I darken the room, close your eyes, and think about whatever pain brought you here today. Something did. You wouldn't be seeking out therapy if you weren't in pain. So something painful brought you here today. Close your eyes and think about what that pain was. And think about where it possibly came from. And I just have them go through these kinds of exercises deeper and deeper and deeper. So first we start with the person that's hurting them, and try to imagine where that came from. As I was growing up, the greatest thing I was taught, I think, in my childhood was put yourself in the other person's shoes. And somehow we forget that as we get older. We kind of leave that back in our childhood. and we don't carry it forward, and that's the very beginning. Put yourself in someone else's shoes. When I was young, I was teased constantly for having red hair and freckles, and I stuttered. I was a mess. And I was always crying, coming home from school, crying. Why do they hate me? Why? And my mom would always say, well, put yourself in their shoes. They probably have something about them that they get teased about. And they're just doing what they're comfortable doing. They're doing what they see being done. They don't know any better. And that, I think, is the very beginning. If you can start learning how to put yourself in someone else's shoes, kind of experience of putting yourself in their skin, and you don't have to know all the backstory about it, just the feeling of it, just the emotion of it, then you can start feeling that compassion for yourself and for others. Does that answer your question?
I was thinking some people come to therapy just to know, for approval or just to feel better, no particular pain.
Yeah.
No.
They don't get that from me. I make them work. As it's not something, no therapist has a silver bullet.
They love me.
There's no silver bullet to fix our pain. It's something that it requires work, and it requires work on the individual's part. I can't do it for them. I can only work on me. They have to do the work on them. All I can do is kind of be a guide and help them unravel it, if they're willing. And like I say, it takes a lot of courage. People are uncomfortable with deep emotions in our society. Even when they're in a room by themselves, sometimes they get to a place where they feel embarrassed and ashamed, and they won't continue. So it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of guts. It's not something for cowards. Anybody else?
Yes, I wanted to comment on Michael always brings up great stuff. The idea of the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
He said it was a big picture. And I'm thinking all the time, why should I bother forgiving? Or why should I bother having anybody forgive me? So I'm thinking of that famous guy, Anonymous, said to forgive is divine.
Mm-hmm.
So the divine is a relationship to an idea of the creator, God, a great spirit that made all this.
Mm-hmm.
And has some purpose for us.
Mm-hmm.
Which may have something to do with forgiveness, especially the idea that there are some paths that say that God forgives before even the event of the transgression. He's already, or she forgives, or has already forgiven. It's that fast. And ours is slower. So people who are advanced on the path may forgive quickly, and others don't. Now, in the Christian thing, the drama, God comes down as an incarnate and he's on the cross, and he says, forgive them, is this dramatic point that's in the whole Bible, because they don't know what they are doing. Paraphrase.
Mm-hmm.
But would you say that the essence of forgiving is done after the event because we're ignorant, stupid, sleep, whatever you want to say, and we're not acting according to the divine order of things that we're supposed to be. So when we don't act that way, we're over and we do harm. Is it necessary to heal the other person you did harm? You need to do this forgiving.
Mm-hmm.
So do you believe if you're going to forgive, that you need some kind of divine help? Do you ask for, or in a prayer, or in meditation, to help me something higher than myself to come and assist, give me the right words, give me the compassion to do it right? Is this, or do you feel that our purpose is to do it on our own, without any divine intervention?
Well, I believe that that divine is within us all the time. All we have to do is access it, which again takes a lot of work. It's not as easy as it sounds. But I believe that that is there, a part of us from the beginning. That's what is the thread that unites all of us, is that divine spark that we all have within us. So it's accessing that. And I think that there's, my belief is that there's, again, layers of compassion and forgiveness. So in some, as we do the work, as people that I've worked with have done the work, they come to a place where forgiveness revolves a lot around judgment. That something that was done to them was bad or wrong, and those kinds of words are attached to it, showing some kind of judgment has been made. So at that point, they need to, what I try to help them discover is that there is no judgment. There is no bad or good, right or wrong. It was a hurtful thing, but it is what it is. And until we can give up trying to change what is or what was, we can't really understand the pain that brought it about. We can't really open our hearts to that compassion without understanding that aspect of it. Does that make sense? I'm not sure I worded it very...
It's basically what you're saying is that you kind of have to let go of your right to judge the person.
Well, we don't really have any right to judge anybody. But we think that we do. We grow up with that notion because we feel judged. In the Judeo-Christian tradition, we are all the time going around making judgments about people. So we do have to give up on that. And that's hard to do. You make judgments all the time, even about small, minor things.
Is it more difficult being a psychotherapist, do you think?
I don't think so.
I think so.
I've
maybe because I'm not practicing, right?
I've been on my journey a long time, and so I've always kind of incorporated a spiritual aspect into my approach. I've always used the cognitive behavioral approach.
I can see that. Yeah.
To which it's a little bit easier to enter to get the spiritual aspect in there, and it just kind of naturally evolved to where it's more spiritual and less psycho these days. Yes.
I was just kind of curious. What is it about? How is it easier to introduce the spiritual aspect in the? What is it in the cognitive? What did you?
Yeah, cognitive behavioral therapy is a process where you use persons. I guess you try to make aware to the person that their thoughts and beliefs and attitudes create the life that they're living. So if they want to go, they can change their thoughts. They don't have to be caught in this continual wheel of the same thoughts, the same attitudes, the same beliefs. They can change all that. Sometimes it's very difficult when we grow up with a certain philosophy or a certain religion and we want to branch out and we want to find things for ourselves. We feel like we may be betraying our families. So sometimes it's not an easy thing to do, to change those thoughts and beliefs. And we get mired in fear and doubt as we go through the process. But it can be done. And so if you enter into the therapy on that basis, then it's much easier, I think, to enter to bring in the spiritual aspect than there would be in some other therapeutic modalities. And I've just come around to using more spirituality and less of the thought process. Let's leave the thoughts out of it a little bit and let's get back into our own intuition. I think intuition is the way that spirit does really communicate with us. And if we're open to it, it will guide us to the right course. I'm sorry, you had...
Oh, I just, this is more of a comment about our culture. I recently watched a couple of videos on Tibetan yogis, monks, and then on some Tibetan nuns. And the first one, it really struck me how they're, even though they had lived through the Cultural Revolution and their culture had been, you know, destroyed, and sometimes they had great physical suffering, at least among their family, that they sort of across the board, each of them had this real way of speaking about it with compassion towards the people that perpetrated these acts. And wow, that. And then the second one I watched was on Tibetan nuns, which not too many people realize that there are quite a few nuns in Tibet. And they translated some of their prayers that they were saying outside of their monastery, just that they were sitting there meditating, saying prayers. And they were just like so plain spoken around, I will love my, you know, I love my enemies, I don't judge, you know, I don't judge others' eyes. It's like, wow, I wonder if that's a correct translation or anything. But it just seemed like the cultural norm was so different than ours, at least in that, you know, that's a highly, you know, spiritual tradition they're from. I don't know
right.
what the village life is like. But,
I think it's all incorporated into one. The Dalai Lama was actually talking to someone who had been imprisoned for 18 years, a monk. He had been imprisoned for 18 years in a Chinese prison. And when he was released, the Dalai Lama was talking to him about his trials and tribulations, and he said, yes, there were times when I felt I was in danger. And the Dalai Lama asked him, in danger of what? And he said, of losing my compassion for the Chinese. That was his worst concern, was that he might lose his compassion for those that were torturing him. So as I was saying, there's lots of levels to compassion and to forgiveness. Yes.
You're a Buddhist practitioner, I got that.
Yes. I don't really have any label that I've...
That's where compassion comes from, generally.
Yes. I've done a lot of studying and a lot of reading, and I've kind of synthesized my own thing.
And you don't stay stuck in duality, being
no.
a cognitive therapist?
No.
Because there's that dancer.
Yeah. No. I don't go there. Yes? You had a question?
Well, I was actually just going to make a comment about pain.
Mm-hmm.
And the automatic, almost like built-in reaction to pain, being judgment, being blame. It seems like it's hardwired almost, and that the deeper the pain is, the more ego-dissolving is required.
Yes.
So the more the higher power, wherever you want to say it's coming from, it seems required grace and being lifted out of our dual state of mind to reach forgiveness. So it doesn't feel as if it's a mental operation or cognitive operation at all.
No.
To me. And I think one of the reasons it takes time for different people, more or less time, is because really to forgive is to be lifted into a state of grace and out of very profound places where we believe that we're separate.
Yes. And that's something that our society has really I can't even think of the word. It's really deeply embedded in us. I had an acquaintance that had fibromyalgia so bad she couldn't lift a glass of water. But when you talk to her, she could not say enough bad things about her family of origin and how they had mistreated her whole life and how these people were wrong and bad to her and just so much. And it became so evident that her physical malady was a manifestation of the blame and anger and resentment that she was holding inside for these people. And she absolutely refused to forgive them. They didn't deserve it. And so she wasn't going to do it, and she was the one that was suffering because of it. They'd gone on with their lives. She was the one that was suffering from keeping this anger and resentment inside and refusing to acknowledge it and let it go.
Could you help her?
She wasn't a client. She was just an acquaintance. So I tried, and she closed off and became... I couldn't get in touch with her. I couldn't... She wouldn't respond to emails or phone calls or any attempt. And I think that's just because she was determined that she wasn't going to forgive. She wasn't ready to hear it. She just... It wasn't... It was...
She was in too much pain.
Yeah. She just wasn't going to allow it in at this point.
She didn't have the resources to deal with the pain.
Well, no. She just, and she didn't want to. She had the resources. She just wasn't ready to do the work. And it takes... It's like, you know, when you're ready to hear something, you can read a book, Adyashanti or any of the books, and they might sound like, oh, wow, I don't get this. This is... And a year later, you read it, and it... Oh, of course, that's perfect sense. I understand it completely. So you have to be ready to receive what the universe brings to you. And sometimes people just aren't. And maybe they never will be. But all that we can do is whatever we can do. We have no control over anybody else's acceptance or non-acceptance of our help. We can offer it, and if it's accepted, great. If not, then that's where they're at, and we just have to accept that.
A question going back to the sort of cognitive approach. I think we're in a very interesting part of our history, the mind, where we're the Western psychology is meeting these very ancient meditation practices like the Tibetan, like them, like you know, very deeply embedded procedures in freeing the mind and the body from and from these afflictive emotions, or but they don't always jive so well, or they're... I think we're doing the work of... Well, I love what Ram Dass said. Said, you know, Western psychology thinks that we need to rearrange the furniture in our head, but the Eastern religions, they throw it out. And, you know, so we're having a little bit of that dance going on right now, and certainly people like Jack Kornfield and what they're doing at Insight Meditation. I mean, to me, it's fascinating. It's a fascinating juxtaposition coming in. Meanwhile, people who are in true mental crises, whether bipolar disorder or depression or schizophrenia or, you know, those very difficult mental states that are often antisocial or self-destructive, none of these modalities are helping them. I mean, maybe unless they're medicated. So once over and over again, I see young people, which breaks my heart, who are in these crises, and all they can be offered, because they're either suicidal or, you know, going into self medication through drugs, through recreational drugs, are only offered that, and then a little cognitive therapy thrown in, maybe a little meditation, but their agitation is so great that you understand that you're not going to be able to sit them down and meditate with them. And so I'm curious about how... I mean, I'm sure in your practice you meet those where the pain is so great that it throws people so out of balance that...
In those kinds of cases, I do think that I think that a therapist needs to work very closely with a psychiatrist, and psychiatrists have become, by and large, just the prescription people, and so that's not enough. And even if they do provide some therapy, it generally isn't sufficient. So, but I do think that people that are actually mentally ill do need to have that appropriate medication in the smallest dose possible to get them to a point where they can participate in their own healing. Mm-hmm. And it's different for each person.
Right, and to live in society without being a danger to others and themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
I just wanted to share that, do you have any words or how to be a witness or an observer of people who have really suffered from the consequences of an action that maybe wasn't intentional, but left them, you know, maybe with disabled, for example. And the reason I ask this is, I work for a center as a paratransit, and sometimes I witness some horrific stories of how people have become disabled and injured, and live with chronic pain, high level, and sometimes there's remarkable acceptance. And even, you know, today there's this fellow who is telling me that, you know, the person that hit him didn't stay around, and that he was thrown onto the windshield of her car, and he saw the look of terror in her face. So even though he had times when he was angry at her, at other times he saw that look of terror, and he had some understanding that she was in terror.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 25 years later, and he's had lived his whole life in high level, you know, chronic pain. Mm-hmm. And I'm witnessing this, and it's just like, wow. You know, and for the most part, I'm pretty good at holding stuff. But there are times when it starts to, like, well, how, you know, this is a lot for a person to hold. He, you know, I was almost, you know, the morphine probably helps, you know, with emotional mm-hmm. pain too, but, I mean, with the physical pain. There's just a lot to witness, and so that the workings of, you know, it makes me think about karma. It makes me think about, you know, how do I have a way of being compassionate with people who are just seem like they're living through such high level pain.
I think that compassion is a healing in itself. Sometimes a better medication than morphine is a hand being held from someone that truly is sharing that pain, can feel it with the person.
Yeah.
It's difficult, and that's why I say you've experienced that pain that he's feeling. It's obvious in your face. And it's difficult for people to have the courage to really allow themselves to feel that deeply for another's pain, because it leads us to recognize that pain in ourselves.
I think that one's going to stay with me for a few days.
Yes?
No, not to take away from that, but is it also true, though, on the other end of it, that sometimes when people get together in some, not always, but sometimes like in a support group situation, where they keep repeating the same things that happened to them over and over and saying, I'm a victim of, you know, this kind of, you know how people stand up in the 12-step mm-hmm. type of groups and keep repeating it over and over. Is there some way where that cannot be helpful, to constantly identify yourself with that wound that you've had at that point and just hold on to it in a sense? Or?
I think that those people are at a support group or at a 12-step program because they want to heal. And so if they keep telling themselves that they're victims, they're not going to be healing if they stay in that place of victimhood. But people need to verbalize. They need to tell their story, and they need to tell it to people that hear it. And oftentimes we don't have that. So that's what those groups are really good for, is to be able to verbalize it. Just that verbalizing of whatever brought you to the place where you are, and you're asking now for healing, is very, very beneficial. But I'm sure that there's people that use those groups to stay in that victimhood, to try and get people to feel sorry for them. And that's not the same as compassion. That's a separateness. You're building a wall, really. That's like this woman did with with absolutely refusing to forgive her family. She was so embedded in her victimhood, she just wasn't going to get out of it for anything. And she would go to group to group. She would go to different spiritual events and different kinds of workshops and things. But no matter where she was going to go, she knew that she was not going to let it work. She was determined that she was going to remain a victim. So, you know, people do use those things to tell their story and just become a victim all over again.
Yeah.
But I think by and large, people that go to support groups and to 12-step programs are there to heal.
Yeah.
So do you do the lecture about the power of thought to create and the importance of people saying something different, telling themselves
yes,
a different story?
Yes, I use self-talk a lot.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's really, you know,
self-hypnosis maybe?
People think that it's, at first blush, people tend to kind of laugh it off and think, you know, yeah, I talk to myself all the time or this or that, or I'm not that crazy, I don't go around talking to myself. But self-talk really does have a very powerful impact. It's a very good tool. And when you become, it helps that awareness to come so that you become aware that as soon as you're thinking a negative thought, as soon as you're getting caught in that negative loop, you can change it.
How do I become aware of my negative self-talk? It's always a question.
Right.
It's so
right.
deep. So subtle.
Well, you become aware of it in one way. I tell people, and this has been true in my own life, I have a physical reaction to it. So I become aware of that. The next time I feel butterflies in my stomach or something uncomfortable, I stop and try to find, okay, what am I thinking? How is this connected? Because the body-mind connection is very, very real and very, very powerful. So that's one way to start having that awareness of when you're thinking something, how you are physically feeling at the time. So when you have that feeling again, you can catch yourself in the thought and change it. Replace it. It's good to have some affirmations that you can easily, like the Hawaiian, I can never say that word. You know, that's very easy. So you can come to a place, and even if you don't have any positive thought to replace the negative thought, whatever it's about, you can just say that, and it stops that cycle.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I found is very helpful is gratitude.
Yes.
Constantly seeing what you can be grateful for, any situation, and that immediately gets rid of a lot of that feeling sorry for oneself or feeling impatient with others and all that. Is
yeah, unfortunately,
really
we've been taught a lot in this society to compare ourselves. And so we're always striving to keep up with the Joneses instead of looking around and seeing all the wonderful gifts that we have in our own life. And especially now with the way the economy is and everything, I've told, and on my radio show, I stressed a lot that all we have is today. The past is over and done. We are not guaranteed our next breath. So all we have is right now. And right now, I have food that I've eaten. I have water that I can drink. I have a shelter over my head. I have breath to breathe. So I'm in pretty good shape. So all you have is right now. And look around right now. And we're all fine. We're great. There's nothing to worry about. Looking into the future and trying to project what terrible things are coming down the pike just is an exercise in futility. It takes us nowhere good. Nowhere where we want to be. Mm-hmm.
A friend said something to me today that felt remarkable. I'm not sure why, but I wrote it down right away. I think it relates. She said they get taken care of if they're a victim.
Yes. Yes, many people will do that. It's almost like
your victimhood becomes a support system.
Syndrome.
A support system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you draw this into yourself, and that's your way. That was the way with this woman that refused to forgive her family. She went to all these different support groups and all these different workshops and all these different events, told her story, and that's how she got attention. That's what she wanted. That's what she never got from her family. She always felt like she was invisible around her family. She wasn't good enough. She wasn't accomplished enough. She didn't keep up with her siblings, whatever the case may be. That's what was missing. So she used that and became a professional victim and went to and said her story over and over and over again to new groups, new audiences, so that she could get their, not only their attention, but their sympathy. And I've gone past my time. Does anybody else have any quick questions or comments?
If anybody gave a compassion, would that have interrupted the storytelling? I'm not sure.
No.
Quite how to distinguish.
Yeah, no, I know what you're asking, and that has been tried. And it just, she's just, I've never seen anybody in my whole experience, the 61 years, as closed off as she has made herself and continues to reinforce that wall. I've never seen it in anyone else.
Just one comment. This has been a session. I really feel like you bring the best out of us.
Thank you.
Well, all I wanted to add was the Hawaiian words. I had heard those words, but it was in an article that was saying these are what people are most likely to say on their deathbed, and that, you know, we need to sort of bring those thoughts close to us now.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of interesting that it was presented to me in a different context.
Mm-hmm.
The Ho'oponopono?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there an order, though? What's the order?
There's not a specific order to say it. It's, and I think that whatever, as you say it, in my experience, when I do it,
there is an order.
There
depends on who's teaching it.
Right, but you, when you start out, you can say it in a specific order. You can go online and find what it is. But I found that for me, it started taking on a shape of its own, and that was the order that was resonating with me. That's was the way that I needed to use it for me, and I think that that happens with a lot of people.
The main character of the event, though, is please forgive me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I love you. That's a big one. Looking inside and really being able to love yourself is huge. And it takes a lifetime of work, I think. I'm still working on it, so it's not easy.
Well, thank you.
Thank
so
you
much
very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity.
It's my pleasure to point out we have a donation bowl over on the counter over there. We encourage you to contribute to it, which we share with our speaker to further her work, and also, of course, to help maintain this store into its 10th year that we're now into now. And there are some books over here from some of the people who have been inspirations to Catherine, as she indicated in the write-up for this event. So please do check those out on your way out. And thank you again for coming tonight, and we'll look forward to seeing you again at future events.
Still on radio?
No. I went through...